Jane was banged out of her meditation. Finally, she switched places with Newmare, asking Spots to give her as easy a ride as possible. On a large and placid horse, her luck was better than it would have been on a pony or than it had been in the wagon. Still, by the time she finished, she had drenched her clothes in sweat, and she had been working throughout the early afternoon. Weary to the bone, she freed the rabbit. He thanked her and fled, promising to keep a better eye out for predator birds in the future. She watched him go, elated in spite of her exhaustion. They camped on a wide open space that ended in a bluff over a tumble of rocks.
"Dane, look!"
Mary said as they were caring for the horses. She pointed out to sea. Three long, sleek gray shapes broke from the waves and plunged in again. Then four shapes, then two.
"Dolphins!"
Once her chores were over, she went to the edge of the bluff. This was her first sighting of dolphins, and she wanted to talk to them. Sitting on the grass, she reached for her magic and felt it slip from her grip. Working on the rabbit had tired her to the point of being unable to bear down with her mind. She closed her eyes and tried again. Tahoy barked. One of the trainees loosed an ear-piercing whistle.
"Concentrate,"
she ordered herself through gritted teeth.
"You can do this."
Slowly she discarded every sound nearby until the only one left was her own heartbeat. Bearing down, she pushed it away and farther. Perversely, it hammered in her ears louder than ever. She forced it back one more time. Newmare saw her collapse.
"Alana, come quick!"
A wide, smooth path sloped ahead, bordered in wildflowers. At the top of the hill, two people waited in the shade of an old and gnarled oak.
"Ma?"
she whispered, her eyes filling, and the woman held out open arms. Dane floated up the path toward her. The man was unfamiliar. He stood by Ma lazily, wearing only a loincloth. He was very brown, heavily muscled, and carried an unstrung bow like a man born with it in his hand. With so much of his skin bare, she could see that there were streaks of green in his tan, a deep green that gleamed in his eyes. Strangest of all, she could see what looked like antlers planted firmly in his curling brown hair.
"New friend, Ma?"
she asked dryly. The woman laughed.
"Still mothering me, Dane?"
A bolt of lightning shot through her chest once, twice. Her mother's face saddened.
"No!"
she cried. Dane fought, but a force was pulling her away.
"Ma!"
"Sarah!"
The man's voice was commanding.
"It isn't time. Let her go."
Suddenly, she felt reality shatter. Now she hung in open air, high over a rocky bluff where ants gathered around a purple fire. She looked back toward the hill, and a storm wing dropped between her and her mother. He looked her over, a nasty grin showing filthy teeth.
"Well, well, what a surprise! What brings you here, little pigeon? Aren't you the darling Queen Jeanne has offered so much to have brought to her alive?"
"Your queen can eat my arrows! I want my ma!"
"Kiss my claws and say pretty please,"
he taunted, and vanished. Dane fell to earth and back into her body. Newmare shook Dane as he held her.
"You fiend! What on earth possessed you? You were dead! I ought to kill you myself!"
"Newmare, calm down.
The lioness bent over Dane, looking white and drawn.
How are you, youngling? You gave us a scare.
Dane grabbed her hand.
You're the purple fire. You brought me back?
I gave you a direct jolt to the heart. We thought we'd lost you.
My heart?
She frowned, remembering.
It made too much noise. I wanted it to quiet down so I could talk with the dolphins.
Do you hear her?
Numaire asked the clouds.
She wanted to talk to dolphins, so she stopped her own blessed heart. Mithros, Minos, and Shaketh.
Dane sat up.
I never.
Numaire opened his mouth, and Onua, behind him, covered it.
Not until you can talk without screaming.
Dane, meditation is done for control over body responses, and thus over the mind.
Alana's purple eyes were amused, but serious as well.
In cutting back the sound of your heart, you are cutting the heartbeat itself.
Well, I won't do that again,
Dane promised, sitting up.
I feel like a mule kicked me in the ribs.
The knight chuckled.
In a way, one did. I gave you quite a shot, youngster.
She reached a hand to Evan, who helped her get to her feet.
Will you behave now?
Onoa asked Numaire. He nodded and sighed as she took her hands from his mouth.
And men say we're emotional,
the Khmer told Dane.
Don't do that again. I'd hate to find another assistant at this time of year.
Wiping her hands on her breeches, she went back to the trainees.
May I ask why you couldn't hear dolphins in the usual way?
Numaire's voice was dangerously pleasant. Dane rubbed her eyes with her fists.
I was tired.
You were tired? Ah, that makes it much clearer. Listen, Magelet, the next time you're tired, try resting for a while. If you simply can't rest, go where you'll get nice and chilled or step into salt water.
He indicated the ocean below.
As you can see, there's quite a bit of it down there.
I don't get it.
He sighed.
Reductions in temperature or contact with salt water can act as amplifiers for magic.
So that's why the whale songs are so loud in the water.
Yes, that's why they're loud. Dane, you must realize these things you're doing when you meditate are real. When you reduce the inner sound of your breathing, you are reducing your breath. When you quiet your heart, you're slowing it down. Your body will react. Understand?
Yes, sir.
She got to her feet with a groan.
Do people have visions when they think they're dead?
His control vanished.
I don't know. I've never tried it.
Oh, well, I can see there's no talking to you the rest of the night. Not till you're out of this pet you're in.
The pet I'm in?
Definitely time to go groom the horses.
She fell asleep during supper and slept through the night. She felt rested when she woke an hour before dawn with something already on her mind. It was the Stormwing. He had been nastily real in a way Ma and her friend had not been. Even now she could smell that thing's reek fouling the salt air. Salt air. There had been no scent to the hill in her vision. She had a good nose, and she would have remembered. There had been flowers. Ma always wore woods lily or sweet pea sachets, and Dane had smelled nothing at all. But the Stormwing had come when she was in the air over this place. She had smelled him. Standing outside the tent in a cold wind, she reached out. She was too tired to go far, less than a mile, only part of her usual range. She brushed the mind of an albatross that wheeled just over the rocks, but that was as far as her senses went. At that distance, she could trust her eyes as much as her magic, and they told her there were no storm wings about. Cloud followed her to the ocean, as cross as Numaire had been.
Haven't you had enough fun?
She asked, gracefully picking her way down the bluff while her mistress slid and scrambled.
Not near,
Dane replied. She sighed in relief when she reached the strip of sand between cliff and water.
Don't distract me either.
I wouldn't dream of it.
If I think about it, I'll only chicken out,
Dane told herself firmly.
Like as not, it isn't near as cold as it looks either.
Yanking off boots and stockings, she plunged into the waves up to her knees. Once her feet were numb, she tried again, gripping a rock to keep from being knocked off balance. There, far overhead, hovering behind a long cloud, a tiny dot of wrongness. The hackles went up on the back of her neck.
Why so far up? He just hangs there, waiting. Watching?
She sat down.
Cloud, keep me from being sucked under.
I will do no such thing. Come out this instant.
Dane turned and fixed her eyes on Cloud.
Now, please.
She used her will, just a touch of it.
It's important.
Grumbling, the pony waded in and gripped the back of Dane's shirt in her teeth.
I hope it rips.
Dane reached behind herself to grab the pony's mane.
If I go, you go,
she retorted. Numb to the waist, she closed her eyes and sent her magic out. There was her nasty friend, a jarring note in the sky. He was far from a single note, however. He was part of a thin, jangling cord that reached north and south where the waves boomed, as far as her hearing could go. She dragged herself out of the water.
Get me to the others, please,
she gasped, crawling onto Cloud's back.
Not the trainees.
To Numera's tent?
The mare sounded worried in spite of herself.
Good. Yes. Have Tahoe bring Onua. It's important.
Just hang on and be quiet.
Dane collapsed over her friend's neck.
Of course.
Cloud's mane was delightfully warm on her face.
I'm sure,
she repeated. All the adults were gathered around Numair's small fire.
They're up and down the coast as far as I can hear.
How can they stay in one place like that?
Bori asked.
They have their own magic,
Numair replied, drying his feet from his own seawater dip, taken once he'd heard what Dane had to say.
Can they see everything?
Alana wanted to know.
Can they look through walls or stone?
I think they see like hawks. I don't know what they can do with their magic.
They can use only a little without being noticed.
Numair was still shivering.
If a sorcerer knows where to look, he can see the aura of their magic for miles. All they dare risk is the bit that holds them aloft.
He made a face.
Once I thought to look that far, of course.
Don't blame yourself. I see magic, too, and I never spotted them.
She patted Dane's shoulder.
Good work.
She got to her feet.
I have to let Jonathan know. He won't be pleased.
She walked away, far from the noise made by the trainees getting up. Within minutes, a small fire blazed where she had gone, burning first orange, then purple. Bori fed their fire more wood.
What now?
She asked the queen. Thyat sighed.
I wanted to stay a few days at Buzzard Rocks, but maybe that's not a good idea. We'll move them along today, camp early at the rocks, and go before dawn. Onua can ward the camp. There's not much else we can do once my lord gets Alana's message.
We've seen fishing boats in villages,
Onua said thoughtfully.
They aren't raiding. They aren't raiding and they aren't killing.
You sound almost sorry.
In a way I am. That would make sense.
Onua got to her feet.
They're watching the coast like cats at mouse holes. But who's the mouse?
The riders moved out briskly and kept up the pace of the day before. Numair, apparently over his bad temper of the previous night, taught and questioned Dane on the habits of dolphins and whales. Late in the day, when they took a side road to the village of Buzzard Rocks, Dane picked up a growing hum. With it came a feeling of otherness, though not that of monsters, or even of the water and tree sprites of the royal forest. She intended to tell Numair once they had pitched camp. Their talk was postponed. When they reached the cluster of huts and sheds that marked the town, they found it was deserted. Thayet broke the trainees up into groups, and they fanned out to search the cluster of buildings. Dane and Cloud followed Numair, who did a search of his own.
It happened fast, whatever it was,
he said, almost to himself, as he peered into barns, wells, and chicken coops.
Yet they did have a chance to pack and gather livestock.
Then turning, he asked,
What's the matter with your ears?
She blushed and stopped rubbing them.
I keep hearing this sound.
Oh?
His look was skeptical.
Hearing with your ears or your mind?
She listened for a moment.
With my mind. Sorry.
Is it like the Stormwings?
No, more like the Undine, but not like her exactly. And I have this feeling as if, I don't know, when I see a juggler or something marvelous.
She looked up at him miserably.
I'm sorry. I can't tell you anything else.
Don't worry. Come on, maybe the others have learned something. Tell me right away if anything changes.
They joined the riders in the village square. No one had found any clues.
They had time to pack,
Alana said.
It wasn't a raid or disease.
The hum turned into a roaring chime in Dane's head. Selda shrieked. They came in low over the beach where the fishing boats lay, giant things too large for birds. The mounts went crazy with fear, needing all their riders' attention. Spots, Cloud, and Tahoe shrank close to Dane and Numair, who were frozen with awe. Selda's ponies broke from her hold and ran into the rocks. Five other ponies and Sarge's general did the same. Dane realized poor Mangle was having hysterics and went to grip his bridle.
Shush,
she told him absently.
Calm down.
Trembling, he obeyed.
Weapons!
Barked Thayet. Those who could do so grabbed their bows. The birds, if they were birds, banked and came for another pass, giant wings shining like dim gold in the sun. This time they gave voice to shuddering, screaming roars. One of them raked the cart's roof with its claws, slicing the canvas as neatly as butter. Dane saw what was about to happen.
Stop!
She called to attackers and defenders. Bori got in the first shot, Thayet the second. The great creatures were out of range, but already they were curving around again.
No!
Dane yelled now to the humans.
Leave them be!
We're under attack!
Bori yelled.
Don't shoot! They don't understand! If you'll give me a second!
But she could see 15 arrows were fitted to strings. She screamed her fury. Ponies and horses grabbed for the arrows, breaking them in their teeth. Sarge's ox actually knocked him over. Dane wasted no time watching something she knew she could catch trouble for later. She ran toward the sea and the incoming creatures, waving her arms.
No, stop! It's not what you think! It's not what they think!
Closing her eyes, she grabbed her power and threw it out like a net, pleading,
Listen to me!
They broke off their attack two wing beats in front of her, curving to each side. Rising above the lapping waves, the female flew out to a rock at the foot of a nearby cliff and perched. The male stalled with his wings and came down, scant yards away from Dane. He cocked his head, predator's eyes glittering down at her, and waited. Sitting on his haunches, he was as tall at the shoulder as Numair, each of his claws as large as a small sword. His body was that of a giant feathered cat, blending harmoniously into the head, beak, and wings of an eagle. His eyes spoke of a nature that was alien to hers, but intelligent. His voice in her mind was deafening.
It's all right to put down the weapons?
The griffin, it had to be a griffin, nodded regally. The mage's eyes lit with wonder.
You can understand me?
The great haunches rippled.
A little, he says,
Dane translated.
It's ideas he gets, like weapons and safety.
Thank you,
Numair told the griffin. He went to the riders as Dane examined the two creatures. The female was gray-silver in color, her mate brown threaded in gold. Both gleamed and shimmered in the dying light of the sun. In her magical vision, they blazed copper.
I don't suppose you could tone down your voice? No,
she said when the griffin looked at her arrogantly. Footsteps crunched in the sand. Alana came up on Darkmoon, shield on her arm, bared sword in hand. The great horse stopped a few feet away, his side streaked with sweat. Dane knew the knight had brought him so close to a creature that scared him witless because she would need the advantage of Darkmoon's height if the griffin attacked. But she wished Alana had tried for less advantage and the horse's peace of mind. She went to the stallion and stroked his muzzle, assuring him he was safe. He believed her, barely.
Ask him where the village is,
Alana told Dane, her voice hard. The great head cocked, and the griffin examined the knight. Dane swallowed as the chiming in her head broke into a handful of notes.
What?
She whispered.
Please, sir, I'm very new at this. You have to...
He chimed again, impatient. From the fire that was his presence in her mind, she picked out an image, Alana's shield. She shook her head, and the griffin repeated the question image.
Lioness, I think he wants you to explain the device on your shield. He won't talk about anything else till you do.
The woman's eyes were hard jewels in the light.
It's a lioness. My own sign. A female lion.
The male stretched his wings and settled.
Could you speak more gently?
Dane asked him.
Your voice hurts. I feel your answers in my bones. It makes translation difficult.
Pressure, a broad hand, settled at the nape of her neck. Suddenly she was inside a circle of light, shielded from the worst noise of the griffin's speech.
Calm down,
Numair said gently.
Relax. I'm shielding you. Take a deep breath. Good girl. You can manage this. Just go easily.
She ordered her mind, sorting out what was griffin and what came from other animals. Focusing on the griffin, she reached more directly into his mind until each ringing note became a symbol or an idea. Once she could manage what her mind heard, Numair carefully freed her from his shield. Now she had control of the translation. The griffin spoke again.
He says there are too many griffins held captive on human shields,
Dane told Alana.
That's why they attacked the village. No, attack isn't right. They flew over, like they did with us, to warn the people not to raid the nest and steal the little ones for shields. They're nesting atop that large spire of rock.
She pointed to where the female sat at its base.
How many villagers did they kill in this warning?
Alana wanted to know.
And Dane, you'd best not lie to protect them.
She listened to something the griffin was telling her.
I couldn't lie if I wanted to, Lioness. He won't let us.
His correction boomed in her mind, and she sighed.
That's not right. Lies can't be told near a griffin. He's surprised we didn't know. That's why they were captured for shields.
There haven't been griffins here in centuries. We've forgotten the lore. Does he know how long it's been since they were seen in human lands?
Dane struggled with the answer.
Sorry, Numair. He doesn't know what you mean. I think he doesn't understand time as we use it. He does say they killed no one. The villagers screamed a lot, then they ran. They're at a great stone house about a day's ride down the coast.
Pirates swoop,
Alana said, relaxing.
That's easy enough to check. Is it true about lying around them, Numair?
I'd heard it. You could try.
Alana opened her mouth, and no sound came out. Her throat worked, but nothing happened. At last she smiled.
I can't. How do they live?
Thayet came to stand with them.
What do they eat?
That at least was easy to understand.
Fish. Dolphins, if they can get them. Seals, sea lions, but mostly fish. He says there are big ones in the open ocean.
No cattle. No sheep or pigs.
Another easy one.
No, Mum. They think grass eaters taste nasty.
The queen hooked her hands in her sword belt, thinking.
Will he agree to let the villagers come back and not harass them?
The griffin's reply was emphatic.
Ouch! As long as they keep away from their nest, he doesn't care what people do.
Dane smiled weakly at the queen.
Their voices, our voices, discomfort their ears. They don't want to come any closer to us than they must to protect the little ones.
Alana sighed, leaning on the pommel of her saddle.
It'd be a shame to destroy such magnificence,
she said, admiring the great creatures. The griffin preened his chest feathers and stood a little straighter. Thayet laughed.
All right. I'll talk to the locals when we see them. Tell your friend we will fight them if they harm a human or any livestock.
The griffin's reply was so loud that Dane's temples throbbed.
He says, don't insult him by calling me his friend. His kind has better things to do than associate with humans.
She knew she was blushing.
He says at least my voice doesn't hurt his ears.
Alana saluted the griffin with her sword.
Your point is taken, sir. Return to your nest, and we won't inflict our voices on you again.
Opening his beak, the male loosed a great ringing cry. Before the echoes had faded, he and his mate were in the air, spiraling up to their nest. The humans made camp in the village square. Once the trainees were busy, the officers and Numair took Dane aside.
You shouldn't have turned our mounts against us.
Thayet's green hazel eyes were serious. She gulped.
I didn't. Honest. They did it without me asking. If you don't believe me, maybe we could bring the griffins back.
No,
Alana said firmly.
We just got the ponies calmed down.
The queen pursed her lips.
You had best study control, mistress,
she warned Dane.
If we can't trust our mounts, we're in trouble.
There's only so much she can do. This is wild magic, your majesty, not the gift. She can't help animals knowing her feelings any more than she can help breathing. I've tested her control. It's as good as she can make it. Wild magic is unpredictable. Thus the name.
Onua slung an arm around Dane's shoulders.
It's got to be harder on her than on us, Majesty. She's a good girl.
Dane bit her lip, glad she had friends. Human ones, not just animals. Thayet rubbed her neck.
I'll be so glad when we reach Pirate Swoop. A hot bath and a night's sleep in a bed, and I'll be a new woman.
She smiled at Dane.
I'm not going to bite you, youngster. I'm not even angry, not really. I will say this, riding with you has been an eye-opener.
Welcome to the club.
You know, I have a feeling, if the people come back, this is going to be a very honest village from now on.
If so, a lot of husbands will be sleeping in the barn.
In the morning, the road swung away from the coast. Dane watched with disappointment as trees blocked her view of the sea. Her sadness grew when Numair left them after noon. He lived in a tower visible to the west. It would take him an extra 3 hours to reach it if he followed the riders. He promised that he'd see her soon. She had to be content with that. By mid-afternoon, the trees thinned and vanished. The main road sloped downhill from there, to pass a large, prosperous-looking village on the shore. The road they followed left the main one to approach a strong-looking fortress built around three towers, one much thicker than the others.
Pirate Swoop,
Evan said. He had fallen back to keep Dane company.
You'll like this place. I think you'll like the Baron, too. He and my father have been friends for years. He's different.
The gates ahead opened to reveal the Baron's and Alana's domain. Pirate Swoop. They climbed a tall mound to enter the castle. Dane was impressed by the thickness of the walls around the outer court and by the alert and well-armed guardsmen. The Baron of Pirate Swoop kept his home in fighting order. A man in gold-trimmed brown ran up to Thyat, bowing repeatedly as he talked to her. The queen signaled Bori, and the second-in-command turned in her saddle.
Riders, this way!
She and Sarge led the trainees to long, low buildings along the wall, stables by the look of one, and the guard barracks. Onua came up beside Dane.
Wait here. I want them to stable their mounts so they can unload the cart.
She grinned.
A bit of advice, for what is worth. Never do anything you can order a recruit to do for you.
Dane grinned.
I'll remember that.
Movement caught her eye. A flag was being run up on one of the three towers. When the breeze caught it, she grinned. It was a gold lioness rampant on a red field, the same as Alana's shield. On the tower next to it was a brown flag decorated with a gold key.
The Baron's flag,
Onua said, noticing the direction of her gaze.
Those flags mean the Baron and the Lady Knight are both in residence.
No flag for the Queen?
Onua shuddered.
Gods, no. It's bad enough the whole palace knows where the summer training camp is without crying it from the towers. George has made this place strong, but why ask for trouble if you don't need it?
Grooms took Thyat's and Alana's mounts as the women stretched. Suddenly, shrieks filled the air. It took Dane a moment to realize the sound was not birds, but children screaming,
Mama! Mama!
A pack of them dashed through the inner court's gate and separated, three to Alana, two to the queen. Thyat's pair, both dark-haired, a boy and a girl, bowed when they were a foot away from their mother, then threw themselves at her.
The prince is nine, the princess eight. They asked to watch the training this year instead of staying with the younger children in the summer palace.
Alana's three, the tallest a true redhead, the younger two blondes with a touch of red in their locks, didn't even stop to bow. She laughed and knelt to return their hugs, disappearing for a moment under their bodies.
You'd think they'd been brought up in a barn, wouldn't you?
A lilting voice asked nearby.
Climbing on their ma like she was a hobby horse.
Dane looked down from her seat on the wagon. The speaker was a tall, broad-shouldered man with brown hair lightened by the sun. His nose was too big for good looks, but there was a wicked twinkle in his large, green hazel eyes, and his grin was catching. He wore a shirt and breeches and had come from watching the sea, to judge from his tousled hair and the spyglass in his hand. She had to return his smile.
They must love her very much.
She's easy to love.
For you, maybe,
Onua said, dismounting.
I know 80 offenders against the king's law who don't find her at all lovable. Hello, Baron.
Onua, every time I see you, gods be my witness, you make me wish I wasn't married.
They hugged vigorously, slapping each other on the back.
You'd never pull in my harness, George. Dane, this gentleman...
Don't call me gentleman. I work for a living.
Dane grinned. Sarge often said the same thing.
This nobleman is Baron George of Pirate Swoop. George, this is Dane, my assistant.
A large hand was offered. Dane shook it. Like all the nobles she'd met in this strange country, his palm was calloused.
Welcome to Pirate's Swoop, Mistress Dane. How did you fall into such bad company?
She blushed, not knowing how to take this charming man.
Stop flirting with her, George. You'll only break her heart.
Onua winked at Dane, who winked back, thankful for the rescue.
How long have the prince and the princess been here?
A week only,
the baron replied, taking his sharp eyes off Dane. In a quieter tone, Onua asked,
Any trouble?
George's eyes flicked to Dane.
You can trust her,
the Khmer assured him.
We all do.
Dane blushed again when George raised his eyebrows.
That's quite a recommendation, young lady. I didn't think Onua even liked two-leggers.
Looking around, he said,
Bless me! So you did take on Evan Lars.
Seeing them, Evan waved and loped over, his long legs taking him across the outer ward court in seconds.
George, I made it,
he said, panting as he offered his hand.
I told you I would. Wait till you hear about the trip we've had. Did you know you have griffins nesting up the coast?
I've got the whole village quartered here,
George said, making a face.
Eating our food and begging me to send soldiers after them. Tell me true, is it really griffins, or just a pair of mean albatrosses?
It's griffins, and you don't have to send a company. Dane here got them to make peace.
I didn't get them to do anything,
Dane retorted. With the charming baron, she might be tongue-tied, but never with Evan.
They don't do anything they don't want to. But they promised the queen not to attack people or livestock,
she told George.
And they can't lie, so I believe them.
Wait, you've had speech with them and made a treaty.
This is a fine welcome you've given me, Laddiebuck,
Alana said, trying to imitate her husband's speech as she approached. She bore a gold-haired child on each hip.
Here I am, home from the wars, and you let me be swarmed over by barbarians whilst you flirt with my friends.
Excuse me,
George said gravely to the adults and to the children he plucked from his wife's hold. Gripping the lioness firmly, he bent her back in a prolonged kiss that looked like a romantic scene in a play. Everyone, even the men-at-arms posted along the walls, clapped, whistled, and cheered.
Does anyone in this land act like they're supposed to?
Muttered Dane. Onua heard her question.
They do in lots of places,
she said, eyes twinkling.
But this isn't lots of places. It's Pirate Swoop. And if you think this is strange, just wait till you've been here a couple of days.
Exploring after the evening meal in the castle's great hall, Dane got directions to the observation deck on top of the third, largest tower. Here the wall rose out of stone cliffs. Looking down, she saw rocks, a thread of beach, and heavy waves. Relaxed, she watched the sun dip itself into the ocean as a cool breeze blew across her face. She liked the swoop, she decided. If she had to live within stone walls all her days, this would be the kind of place she'd want.
Beautiful, isn't it?
The lioness relaxed against the stone wall at Dane's side.
I'm so glad to be home.
You have a home to go to,
the girl thought, and was immediately ashamed of herself. How could she begrudge the knight a place of her own?
I don't see how you could ever leave this.
I don't either. Except I took an oath as a knight, then as champion, long before I came here. And I keep my oaths.
They fell silent again.
It's odd to see her in a dress, wearing perfume. It's pretty, whatever it is. And pearl earbobs and silk. And yet she fits here.
She sighed.
I wish this were my place. I bet I could fit here, too.
A distant cry fell upon her ears. She and Alana looked north and saw a bird shape wheeling over the ocean.
Griffins. It's like a story or a bard's tale.
So are lady knights,
thought Dane, but she kept that to herself.
If only the griffins were all of it.
They looked up. Only a handful of clouds were in the sky, but they knew there was a storm wing behind one, and that more waded up and down the coast.
My father is a scholar.
The woman's voice was soft.
The king asked him to report on what he could learn about storm wings. He says they live for destruction and the fear that destruction provides. They eat only the products of war, famine, and disease, the bodies of the dead. They drink only the energy of human suffering and fury. They've had a long fast, 400 years worth in the divine realms. I have the feeling they won't be as easy to send back as they were to set free.
Send back?
Dane had a thought, and she didn't like it.
If they had to be locked in the divine realms, maybe they were never supposed to be there. Maybe they're our predators.
Our predators?
Surely.
She tugged one of her curls.
You speak of locking them up again as if it can be done. What if the gods don't allow it? Because the storm wings are supposed to be here, not there.
Alana winced.
That's a very cheerful thought. I wish you hadn't come up with it. If you're right, we have a lot of battles ahead.
Dane slept in the stable loft, cushioned by the bodies of the castle's many dogs and cats. At breakfast, she listened as the trainees were given a day off, except from caring for their mounts. That meant a day off for her as well, and she could use one. All her shirts needed mending, and a wash wouldn't hurt any of her clothes. Getting directions to the castle laundry, she returned to her loft and gathered her clothes. On the way back from the laundry, she found Zelda checking the saddlebags that had been issued to each trainee for the trip south.
Smile,
the brunette said, shoving her belongings into a pack.
I'm quitting. I've had enough fun in the wilderness.
Dane glanced away. She wouldn't miss the girl at all.
Don't look so pleased.
Zelda folded the bags and hung them next to her tack.
One of these days, you'll be packing yourself.
Me? Whatever for?
The older girl's smile was bitter as she looked Dane over.
Are you blind? How long can they afford to keep you on, do you suppose? After that thing with the griffins, I figured it was all over for you.
Dane felt cold.
I've no notion what you mean.
What happens if they're in a battle and you get hurt? You think they can risk their mounts coming to your rescue? I don't.
The girl shouldered her pack as Onua came in.
Don't say I didn't warn you.
Onua looked at her suspiciously.
You'd best get to the wharf. That boat won't wait.
Zelda gave both of them an ironic salute and was gone. Onua rolled up her sleeves.
This is a surprise inspection. Let's see how the trainees' mounts look while they're off relaxing. You start on that side. I'll start here. We can talk while we work. Look at everything, mind. Nose to tail. What poison was she dripping in your ear?
Dane stroked the muzzle of the first pony with a hand that shook.
She said the riders can't afford to keep me. She's right, isn't she? If animals know I'm in trouble, they will come to me. Numair himself said I couldn't shield all my wild magic.
Maybe that's so.
Onua ran a brush over Padrock's Minchi to see if extra hair fell out after a morning grooming.
But it wasn't the riders that hired you. It was me. As long as I say so, you work for me, not them.
How can you do that? You're a rider.
No, I'm a civilian expert. I deal with whatever concerns horses, and that's all. I'm no soldier.
Onua pointed at her with a brush.
You saved my life in the marsh and at the palace when the storm wings hit. You saved Numair. He was the first person here I knew liked me for myself. I won't let you down.
She reached over and dabbed at a tear rolling down Dane's cheek.
Those of us that's horse-hearted have to stick together, all right?
Dane nodded.
But you'd tell me if I wasn't giving satisfaction?
Onua grinned.
If we spend more than the morning checking these mounts, I will be most unhappy. I was planning to take the afternoon off.
Dane went to work, smiling. They had just finished when hoofbeats rang outside and a voice yelled,
Dane, they said you were in here.
She ran outside as Numair climbed off his sweat-stained gelding.
Come with me. We have to find the Stormwings.
She shaded her eyes to look up at him.
What do you mean? Aren't they behind their little clouds being sneaky?
He shook his head.
They're gone. Vanished.
She spent the afternoon on the observation deck with Numair and Alana, searching as far out as she could drive her magic for any sign of the immortals. The gifted ones applied themselves to scrying, or looking. Numair used a round crystal he carried in a pouch, Alana a mirror with, Dane was tickled to see, roses painted on the back.
It's not my taste. This is from Tom, my oldest. A birthday gift. It's the thought that matters.
She glanced at the back of the mirror, winced, and turned it to the reflecting side.
That's what I keep telling myself, anyway. And it makes a very good scrying tool.
For herself, Dane sank deep into meditation, listening up and down the coast. She heard the griffin female return to the nest with food. Griffin males, it seemed, helped to brood eggs. Her friends among the sea lions were prospering, as were other seals and sea lions. A number of whales had come to swim in the waters around the swoop, but she didn't have time to attempt to speak with them. Crossing her fingers, she hoped they'd stay close long enough for her to get a chance. Other sounds she identified as two groups, Mary called them pods, of dolphins. At last she drew her senses back to the castle.
Nothing.
Alana grimaced.
No luck for us either.
So our friends have given us the bag.
The Baron had joined them at some point. Seeing Dane's puzzled look, he said,
They've escaped us. It's thieves' cant, meaning a delightful trick whereby you wait for your pursuer and slip a large bag over his head to blind him.
Dane scowled.
Well, I'm not blinded, and they aren't there.
George smiled at her.
I believe you.
He looked at Numair.
Is there a way to nab one of these beasties for questioning?
Numair frowned.
I'm not really sure. If we can kill them, I assume we can capture them. You know, it's moments like this that I really miss the university library.
We're working on ours,
Alana pointed out.
Maybe the king has the proper books already. And wait, what about the golden net?
Numair's face lit.
You know, with a few adjustments?
My lords and ladies.
A proper man in the livery of a castle servant had come up to the deck.
We dine in half an hour.
I think I have the basic spell in a book I've been reading,
Alana told Numair.
If you want to come take a look.
They followed the servant down into the tower, talking about spells and their variations. Dane looked at the sun. It was low.
No wonder I'm hungry.
If you hear one of those nasties again, let's catch it.
I don't think we'll get anywhere talking to one.
The Baron's grin was neither warm nor friendly.
You leave that to me.
They studied the ocean together.
It's strange how folk look at a thing. Numair sees what's coming to us. He thinks of the return of old magic, magic that's controlled by none and understood only by a few. My wife sees a threat to her kingdom. Me, I'm a commoner born and bred, title or no. You know what I think of? Omens and portents. Like the red star that blazed over us when the Emperor Ozorn was crowned 7 years back.
Then maybe we're lucky the Stormwings are giving us so much time to think about them before they do something really nasty.
George laughed.
Now there's a practical way to look at it, and I thank you. It does no good to brood about what might come.
He offered his arm with a bow.
Let's go to supper and drink to the confusion of our enemies.
Numair kept her at her lessons until the midnight hour was called. She trudged back to the stable the riders used, yawning heartily as she climbed to her loft bed. Her mind spinning with new animal groups, she kept her eyes open barely long enough to pull on her nightshirt. She awoke to a stable cat giving birth near her ear, and three children, a girl and two boys, watching her solemnly.
"I suppose you're fair proud of yourself," Dane told the cat. "My wondrous book says you're a feline and a carnivore and a vertebrate and a mammal. I wish them that wrote it could smell around here right now, and maybe they wouldn't call you all those pretty names."
The girl wriggled out from between her blankets and grabbed her clothes. The feline was busy cleaning the last of the new kittens and refused to reply.
"It's too early to be paying social calls," she told the children.
"Our mama said you were a mage."
That was Thiot's daughter, Callison. She took after her handsome father, sharing his blue eyes and coal-black hair. Dane sat on her bed.
"I'm no mage,"
she grinned.
"Numair calls me a magelet, but that's just for fun. It's too early to be answering questions."
"Ma says you help animals."
Tom's hair was redder than Alana's, and he had George's green hazel eyes.
"We brung you him. He was on the wall."
The two older children lifted a basket and offered it to Dane. Inside lay an osprey, a fishing hawk, glaring at her over a broken leg. If the cat hadn't been giving birth close by, she would have known about him already. She sighed and took the basket.
"It's all right, then. You can go now."
Turning her attention to the bird, she carefully took him from the basket.
"How do you manage this, sir?"
He shrieked and slashed at her when she joggled his leg.
"I'm sorry,"
she murmured, gentling him with her mind.
"I'll make it better. I hope."
She went to work, unaware that the children watched her, fascinated. Bird bone was easier than otter bone to mend. It was thinner and hollow. Better still, it wasn't a clean break, but one of the green stick kind, which meant the bone simply had to be fused together again. Opening her eyes, she saw that the break was healed, the bird's pain gone. She was dripping sweat onto him.
"Sorry,"
she murmured as he shook himself. He cocked his head, looking at the mended leg. He was impressed and intrigued by what she had done. At the moment, however, what he was most interested in was a nap. She smiled.
"Just, when you wake up, obey the rules. No hunting or teasing any other creatures in this castle. They're all my friends, too."
The osprey understood. She settled him on a wooden rail and brought water from the stables below. Promising she'd see him later, she gathered her things again and left. Her early visitors waited for her by the stable door.
"You missed breakfast,"
Prince Roald said.
"We brought you some."
He handed over a napkin wrapped around sweet rolls.
"Thank you. That was very kind."
She wolfed two of the rolls, knowing her manners were terrible and not caring.
"Papa gets hungry when he's been using his gift,"
remarked the princess. Dane wiped her mouth.
"It was good of you to bring the osprey and the food. I thank you. Now, I think you should go back to the nursery, please. Won't the servants be missing you?"
"We're too old for the nursery,"
replied Tom with all the dignity of his 6 years.
"Only the twins have to stay there. They're four."
"Poor things. Listen, I have to bathe, and then I work for the riders, which means I've no time to chat. Goodbye."
They looked at her hopefully. What was she supposed to say? At home, she'd never spoken with a child. Parents had always kept them from her.
"If I ignore them, they'll go away,"
she decided, and went to the baths. When she came out, they were waiting. They trailed her to the stable, admiring the new kittens while she stowed her gear. They followed her back down to the ponies and helped as she looked after Selda's old pair, as well as Mangle and Cloud, holding brushes, pails, and rakes for her. They were still with Dane as the trainees, subdued after a morning conference with their officers, came to look after their mounts. Thyet broke out laughing when she saw what was going on.
I'm sorry, Dane, but it's like ducklings. No offense, children.
You said we ought to learn more about the stables, Mama.
Callison was more outspoken than her brother.
You said if we wanted to come with you and the riders when we're older, we'd have to take care of our gear and all.
Dane has to decide if you can stay, however.
The girl wished the children wouldn't look at her piteously. Thyet was right. It was like ducklings. She could have shot them easier than resist those eyes.
Onua? Sarge?
She asked, hoping. They shook their heads.
Look at it this way,
Bori said.
You'll need help with the new extras. JC and Kenelm handed in resignations a little while ago. Starting tomorrow, we're taking groups outside the castle walls for days at a stretch. You won't even have Onua then.
Selda had been right, Dane thought, looking at Bori and the queen.
They know I won't be helpful in the field, not if the ponies obey me first.
A gentle hand rested on her shoulder, Onua's.
Somebody does have to care for the washout's horses. It's real work, not just something to do because we haven't the heart to throw you out. And you need to stay close and study with Numair, remember?
Once you start, no quitting,
Thyet told her children.
If you agree to help Dane, that's what you do. It's a responsibility. You can't stop just because you're tired of it.
The two coal-black heads nodded seriously.
Tom?
The lioness asked.
I don't think he's old enough to bind him,
Dane thought, but Tom was already promising. She recognized the expression on his face. He might be only 6, but he would keep up with Roald and Callison or die trying.
Which means I'll have to watch him,
she thought with a sigh.
Ducklings.
A week passed. It was easier to manage them than she expected. Being able to meet wild animals was a powerful attraction, one the ducklings did not tire of and would not risk losing. Though she incurred the wrath of all the nursery helpers but the chief one, Maud, by introducing their charges to savage beasts, she presented her friends to weasels, crows, bats, and deer. She let them watch as she worked to heal one of the dogs who'd had a paw smashed by a passing wagon. She was surprised to find Roald and Callison did help in the stable, and that only Tom's size kept him from doing as much. She knew from her meetings with the twins that his maturity came from the possession of 2 appallingly lively younger siblings. Roald and Callison also had younger sibs, but their maturity seemed to result from what people expected Tortallan royalty to do. She was surprised, and a bit shocked, to learn that they fed and groomed their ponies at home. She had never heard of princes and princesses who had chores.
I'll be a page in a year,
Roald pointed out one day, as they helped with the constant chore of mending tack. They had settled on the flat area in front of Dane's stable, as she had come to think of it, as a place for such chores.
I'd have to learn then anyway. It's best to know as much as I can ahead of time. Papa says later the other lessons will keep me busy.
I'll be a page too.
Callison had insisted Dane call her Callie, as the children did.
Papa said girls can be nice, so that's what I'll do.
Dane was about to ask Tom if he wanted his shield when a messenger came through the gate at full gallop. Covered with dust, the man slid from his horse as ostlers came to take it.
Lioness! Message for the lioness!
A servant bowed.
This way.
Tom, the princess, and the prince watched, all looking grim.
Great,
Tom said.
She has to go away again.
Callie sighed.